Chapter 13. Owen.
Wait! Zara shouts frantically, looking down the hill away from me. Come back!
Confused, I jog over to where she's hiding behind the boulder, bearing my makeshift dagger in case of danger. She stands, peering into the valley with her hand outstretched, a look of shock and eagerness on her face. Upon seeing me, she begins gesturing wildly below.
There was someone down there,
she says, pointing to a spot more than a dozen paces away.
A young boy. An actual person.
Quirking an eyebrow, I regard the valley skeptically.
A person?
I ask.
Are you sure?
She nods emphatically.
We have to follow him. Try to talk to him. Maybe he can help.
If there's another person out here, he's probably a dangerous criminal, I reply flatly. That's the only reason anyone is exiled.
A boy criminal? She demands heatedly. I highly doubt that. He's getting away. We have to go after him.
With that, she takes off, running precariously fast in her descent of the treacherous hillside. Groaning inwardly, I rush after her, if anything, to keep her from plummeting to her death. We quickly make our way to the bottom of the hill, entering a gulch littered with red-colored stones. There, surprisingly, I see the telltale signs of footprints marring the dirt. Footprints not belonging to Zara or myself.
All right,
I concede silently, following the trail. Maybe she wasn't seeing things after all. The prints, smaller than those of a full-grown man, wind through the gulch and into another ravine, going around another hill in the direction opposite of our shelter. As we come around the bend, I spot someone climbing up one of the hills. Skidding to a halt, I grab Zara by the arm and pull her behind a stand of gnarled bushes.
He's going to get away, she complains, but I raise my finger to my lips.
I'm a ranger, remember? I'll be able to track him. But we shouldn't let him know that we're on his trail because there could be others, and we don't know if they'll be friendly. She opens her mouth to protest, then hesitates as my words sink in. Ultimately, she nods in agreement.
Fine, we'll track him. But we do it today. There are still several hours left before the sun goes down, and I don't want to lose him.
The thought of being stranded in these hills and away from our shelter makes me uneasy, but I reluctantly agree. Zara can be bloody difficult to reason with when she sets her mind to something. We wait several long minutes as the stranger climbs over the top of the hill. When he vanishes from sight, we emerge from our hiding place and cautiously creep along the trail, careful not to make too much noise. The lad's footprints, while difficult to follow at times, still provide a decent enough path to track as we wend our way through the uneven crags. Things become trickier as Zara and I crest the top of the hill. He would undoubtedly see us coming up behind him if we were to simply walk down the other side, the barren hilltop already offering little in the way of cover. This forces us to take things slower and for me to scout ahead to make sure he's out of sight. The hours grow long as we pursue him, traversing the rocky terrain in a winding, dizzying path. The sun sinks further west, the hazy blue sky turning orange as twilight sets in. We reach a point that I begin to worry that we won't have enough time to make it back to our shelter before nightfall. As we come to the top of yet another rock-covered hill, I motion for Zara to stop.
We need to start heading back, I say softly. He's leading us on a wild goose chase.
She looks up at the sky and bites her lip, clearly concerned as well by the lateness of the hour.
Just a bit longer, she protests. I have a feeling that we're getting close.
I let out a frustrated sigh.
Close to what, Zara? Right now I don't have a clue where we are.
She looks as if she's about to reply when she glances over my shoulder, her eyes growing wide. She wordlessly points, causing me to look in the direction of her gaze. On the hill opposite us, a cluster of scrawny, rag-clad people struggle to lift a large rock out of the dirt. There appears to be a half dozen of them, and they have yet to notice us gaping at them from across the divide. I fall into a crouch behind some bushes, prompting Zara to do the same.
They look like they're workers of some kind,
I mutter, squinting, trying to make out the details.
What are they doing trying to lift that rock?
Keeping low, I creep closer to the edge of the hilltop, attempting to get a better look into the valley. Below, I discover that there are even more of these people milling about around a flatbed wagon laden with stones of every size. There's more than a score of them, all with the same scraggly hair and brown-colored clothing, their postures bent and unassuming. Even more intriguing are the dull metal collars they wear around their necks.
"Light almighty!" Zara whispers behind me. "Owen, I think these people are slaves."
"Yeah," I reply uneasily. "I was thinking the same thing." We're so engrossed in watching these people that I fail to notice a figure coming up behind us. A slight scrape on the rocks causes me to twist around. I bring up my quill dagger to strike, only to realize it's the same boy we'd been following for most of the afternoon. He stares at us, slack-jawed, his eyes wide with surprise and wonder. "Ah, hells," I mutter, feeling like a fool for not paying enough attention to my surroundings. He's an older boy, probably around 15 years old, with earnest dark eyes and a gaunt, dirt-smudged face. Even he wears a collar, the thick iron band loosely encircling his neck with no lock or hinge in sight. The youth regards us for a moment longer, then shouts in a strange, foreign tongue, his voice echoing throughout the valley. Everyone immediately stops what they're doing and gazes up at us, their expressions fearful. The air grows deathly quiet as the echoes fade, an uncomfortable feeling washing over me as I stand atop the hill.
"Owen?" Zara asks, her voice thick with uncertainty. "What do we do now?"
"I'm not sure," I admit, glancing from the boy to the people gathered below. The youth speaks again, seeming excited by our presence, his words jumbled and unintelligible. He boldly strides up to us and offers a hand to Zara, which she takes hesitantly, her expression one of cautious amazement.
"Zara, what are you doing?"
She doesn't look back at me. Her eyes are fixed on the boy.
"I think he wants us to go with him."
"I can see that," I reply hotly. "Let go of him. He could be dangerous."
"Dangerous?" she says. "No, I don't think so." "Do you want me to go with you?"
She directs her question to the boy. He replies in his strange language and points down at the rest of his people. She smiles and allows herself to be led down the trail. Beaming, the youth pulls her along, chattering in what sounds like an amiable tone, while motioning emphatically with his free hand.
11 bloody hells," I murmur, following warily behind them.
"You're going to get us both killed."
The slaves look even scrawnier up close, their tanned skin rough and their limbs thin and spindly. Unlike the boy, the others seem to be afraid of us. They avoid eye contact when we draw near and shy away from our presence, shuffling their feet uncertainly. One of them, a bearded man who appears to be a few years younger than Elias, breaks away from the rest and approaches the boy, his unease apparent in his jerky movements. He gestures at us and says something in a low voice, causing the youth's smile to vanish.
"Do you understand anything they're saying?" I ask, leaning over to Zara.
"No,"
she replies thoughtfully.
"I've never heard such a language before."
The boy answers the older man brazenly, pointing at the two of us like we're some sort of prized discovery. The man shakes his graying head, and an argument commences, leaving Zara and me to stand there awkwardly with the eyes of everyone in the valley upon us.
"Light, we need to get out of here," I think, firmly gripping my demon quill.
I glance around, searching for a way out of this valley.
"These people look half-starved. They'll probably try to eat us."
Judging by the similar features of the man and the boy, I guess them to be father and son, and the way the elder one speaks on behalf of the group makes me think he holds a place of authority over everyone here. Eventually, the conversation comes to an end. The two stare at one another until the older man seems to deflate. He sighs, gazing over his shoulder at the other people and then up at the darkening sky. He mutters something quietly, then throws his hands into the air as if in defeat. The lad suddenly brightens, a smile splitting his dirty face. He turns to Zara and says something in a gleeful tone.
"I think this is a good thing," she remarks,
glancing at me with a questioning look. I shrug, unable to make heads or tails of the conversation. Within minutes, the slaves prepare to depart, carrying their burden of rocks and trudging to the west. The youth pulls Zara along, pointing in the direction the people are moving and jabbering excitedly in his language. "What's happening?" I ask, suddenly worried. Narrowing my eyes, I shoot a suspicious look at the passing slaves, who all shrink away from me as if I might strike them.
"I'm not sure," Zara replies, "but I think they're taking us to where they live."
"Don't you think we should investigate a little first before we go off with a bunch of strangers?"
"I don't think I could get rid of this one if I tried," she replies with a half-chuckle, motioning at the boy. "Besides, I think I'd rather go with them than return to that dingy cave."
Grumbling under my breath, I set off after them, falling into step beside Zara and her new friend. The others give the three of us a wide berth, more than a few muttering to themselves under their breath.
"Let's hope this isn't a colossal mistake," I think, keeping a hand firmly on the handle of my dagger. "I'd hate to end up in some barbarian's cookpot."